Welcome back to BadQuaker.com podcast. Today is Wednesday, June 15th, 2011. I almost said 2007. That almost came out of my mouth. I'm Ben.
And I'm Kai.
And we're here from 2007. We just jumped in a future machine. What did you people do? No, actually, this is entirely predictable from 2007, and plenty of people did predict this mess from 2007. Let's see, a few of the things we have covered in the past. We don't need to go back to voting again, but I did want to mention one thing about voting. I want to, in case someone listened to our podcasts, what do we do, about 30 podcasts on voting?
Something like that.
Or maybe three?
They were all like 6 hours long, yeah. I'm pretty sure.
But if somebody heard the podcast on voting and they're like, hey, you know, I really think I should vote. I don't agree on that. Hey, vote.
Yeah.
You know, because it's not like you have to have your libertarian card stamped by us to be a true libertarian. If you feel to vote, vote. And especially, in my opinion, especially if it's small elections where you can have an effect, then jump out there and vote.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that, you know, Kai sees it as an act of immorality, and the fact that I see it as counterproductive to the destruction of the state means nothing. If you feel that you should vote, then go vote, because really and truly the core of the libertarian concept is that your opinion may be right or may be wrong, but you're entitled to it, and you're entitled to act upon it as long as you don't, you know, harm anybody else or enforce yourself upon anybody else.
Yep.
And so the same with us. You know, this is just our opinion. And if you feel like voting, man, get out there and vote. If you feel like supporting Ron Paul or whoever your favorite candidate is, get out there and, you know, volunteer or send them money.
Or anything else you want to do, you know, hand out flyers, petitions. You know, try to get legislature on ballots, you know, hand out pamphlets about jury nullification, any of that sort of stuff. If that's what you feel is correct for you to do, then by all means go do it, you know?
Yeah, I do want to give a quick mention of the Fully Informed Jury Association. Is that what it's called? Fully Informed Jury Association. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Anyway, they're doing great stuff. They go to courthouses, they have all the pamphlets, and they have information, and they hand it out to potential jurists. And jurists who will stop and read this stuff and understand it very often realize that the judge lies to them. And judges do this. I have been in the jury situations where the judge absolutely lies and says, you as the jury are not judging the law, you're judging the facts of the case. And that's a lie.
Mm-hmm.
The fact of the matter is, and this is throughout judicial history, not only in American judicial history, but in all the way back through English judicial history, the purpose of the jury was not only to judge the individual, but was judging the law itself.
Mm-hmm.
And if the law was not a just law, the jury had the right to throw it out of court.
Yep. And if you're not familiar with jury nullification and you're not sure what your rights are if you get called to be a juror, there are a lot of really great resources on the internet to read up about jury nullification. And if you do get called to be a juror, you know, print out some of that information and take it with you.
Yeah.
You know, pass it out to your fellow
jurists. Yeah. And if nothing else, you know, it's a good opportunity. You're going to be forced into this anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, literally, it's a form of slavery. They don't give you a choice. They come. If you don't do it, they will come and haul you away and slap you with a fine and put you in a cage.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you're going to be forced into this anyway. It's kind of like what we're talking about with voting. At some point in time, we're going to be forced to vote.
Yep.
Well, when you're forced to vote, what are you going to do? You vote.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And when you see, like, North Korea, they have elections for the dear leader in North Korea.
Right.
And oddly enough, they have 100% turnout and 100% re-elect the dear leader.
Yep.
Well, of course, that's what you do. I mean, what are you going to do? Get killed over the stupid thing?
Mm-hmm.
So you just go and you vote for the dear leader, and you go back to your rice farm, and you hope you don't die this week.
Right.
And so when you're going to the jury to do jury duty, you're being forced anyway. Go ahead and download some of the stuff from from Fully Informed Jury, and we'll put a link on the webpage today. But you can just Google jury nullification or fully informed jury,
yep,
and just get that information and go into it knowing what your rights as a jurist are, because the judge is not going to tell you.
And if you do not want to be a jurist, a juror, I don't know, that's a weird word. I don't like that word. If you don't want to be on the jury, just casually mention jury nullification during your interview.
Yeah,
and
actually,
they'll get you out of there as quickly as possible.
Yeah, the prosecutor will definitely take you off the list.
Yeah.
They will get rid of you. So if you're going to actually use your jury nullification capabilities,
don't mention it.
Don't mention it until the time comes when you actually vote on the guilt or innocence of the party. And then lay it down.
Yep.
Otherwise, before that, they will yank you out of there, and you'll be sent off to the cornfield, so to speak.
Yep.
You ever see that episode of Twilight Zone where anything little boy
the
didn't
little
want?
The little boy, yeah.
Anything he didn't want got sent to the cornfield.
Yep.
Yeah, judges are like that.
And that I wanted to kind of segue from that because, you know, we were talking about the Fully Informed Jury Association. There are a lot of organizations like that within the whole liberty movement. You know, the people up in the Free State Project are doing great things. There's a lot of activists out there that are really kind of working really, really hard trying to get liberty, you know, liberty within our lifetime, as they say. And,
mm-hmm,
you know, you and I don't necessarily think that that's a goal that can be accomplished, but I certainly appreciate that they're trying,
yeah,
you know, that they're getting the word out there.
Well, and those things need to be done. Somebody needs to do it, and they fill that gap. You know, it's kind of like if you imagine a battlefield, and you imagine like an old battlefield, the way they used to fight in like World War I, where there's just opposing trenches, and it's just, mm-hmm, a meat grinder where wave after wave of soldiers gets shot and torn up. There are those of us in the liberty movement who have to be in those trenches and just have to charge directly into the machine guns, and that's our fate, you,
mm-hmm,
know. And some of us are not suited for that. Some of us are more suited for, you know, running the artillery back in the back. Some of us are the medics. You know, some of us are the people back home buying the war bonds.
Mm-hmm.
Wars don't happen. This is using the statist model to support our libertarian and anarcho-capitalist views. But a state doesn't happen without a war doesn't happen without funding. And one of the major ways of funding a war is through you know, bonds, mm-hmm, war bonds, and convincing the people back home to support the war.
Yep.
Well, in a sense, supporting the war on the state is not necessarily going out blowing things up or getting yourself arrested for some people. For some people, it's picking out an organization like Mises.org or the Fully Informed Jury or the Free State Project and sending them a couple bucks.
Mm-hmm.
You don't break your bank account, but if you send them a dollar or two,
sharing a link on your Facebook page.
Sure, anything like that you can do. And you know, there are different ones of us at different stages of development in the liberty movement. And a lot of times we're surrounded by family members who don't necessarily understand or accept these things.
Mm-hmm.
And so you kind of have to be that undercover libertarian. And you can't really come out, you know, it's like you're hiding in the closet. You can't really come out of the closet and go, mm-hmm, I'm a libertarian.
Yeah.
Because they will not understand it. They will not accept it. You will be ostracized.
Yep.
They will beat you down until you admit you're not a libertarian.
And saying you're an anarchist is even worse.
Yeah.
Because libertarian, whether you're a libertarian who aligns themselves with the actual Libertarian Party or not, in a lot of people's minds, being a libertarian is a little bit more socially acceptable because there is an actual political party associated with it.
Yeah.
Saying that you're an anarchist,
they translate that into you're a nut.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, let me touch on this for a second. You know, I don't know how many times this has happened. I've said, well, I'm an anarcho-capitalist. Well, what is that? Well, you know, I support anarchy, capitalistic anarchy. And the person in response will be, well, the Webster's Dictionary defines anarchy as being when everyone wants to kill each other, you know, or some ridiculous thing like that. And you think, now, honestly, I've known this person for years. Do they really think that I want slaughter in the streets mm-hmm. and piles of bodies and burning dumpsters? Do they really think I want that?
Right.
Is this how shallow our...
Do they really think that I'm so stupid mm-hmm. that I don't know that that's what the dictionary says?
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, really? That's what the dictionary says? Well, that's it. I'm turning around my I'm going to be a Democrat.
Right. And capitalist is almost as bad to say.
Yeah. Yeah, because they put this image in their mind that is entirely not capitalism. Yeah.
They see, oh, you're a capitalist, and they view the, you know, the little guy from the Monopoly game with the top hat and the monocle, and they're, oh, you're all for, you know, slave factory labor.
You want to destroy the environment.
Yeah.
Oh, man. You know, speaking of destroying the environment, I was having a discussion with somebody... Oh, a couple days ago. What was that about? The free market use of property and what would happen if there was no government to protect people's land and there was no if the government wasn't there to preserve millions of acres to keep the nasty industrialists from intentionally polluting it. You know, like BP would just go out there in the Great Plains and dump oil all over everything if they got the chance. And, you know, where our conversation finally ended up was, first off, there are private organizations that take collections and then they go purchase land.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually privatize land for the purpose of preserving it.
Ducks Unlimited does that.
Ducks Unlimited is a perfect example. That when Ducks Unlimited started, the duck population was drastically falling, and so was the geese population.
Yep.
Now, I don't know how it is in the rest of the country, but in Ohio, there are so many geese walking around. You know, at the right time of the year, it's like...
And they can be vicious, too, yeah. Man.
But that's strictly due to the private activities of organizations like Ducks Unlimited mm-hmm. and other organizations, too. The guy I was talking to mentioned an organization that's in Oklahoma that's preserving the prairie.
Mm-hmm.
And they have just done a tremendous job just purchasing prairie mm-hmm. and preserving it.
There's a huge, ranges... Mm-hmm. out in the Midwest where you can go and you pay a fee and you can go hunt on there.
Yeah.
They do like wild boar hunting and, you know, all of this sort of stuff.
That's real popular in Texas.
Yeah. And these organizations, these companies, keep this land in good condition.
Mm-hmm.
They keep their population of the animals that they're hunting up because if they don't have the animal, you can't sell the money. You can't.
It's an asset.
Yeah. It's just like stock. That's their product, you know.
Yeah. This is the thing. Well, let's take it into this. This is the thing about forestry and mm-hmm. forest management.
You hear forest logging is the prime example. People say
the
all
demons
the time,
of the logging industry.
I can't even count how many times I've heard people go, well, if it weren't for the government, logging companies would just log all across Yellowstone and there'd be no national parks.
The problem with the logging industry is the socialization of land mm-hmm. and the ignoring of the proper property rights in the West.
Yep.
Where you have private property and where a logging company owns private property, they have a vested interest in protecting that private property and making it produce for more than one harvest.
Right.
This is like if there was a farmer who owned a field and he planted corn in it, and then at the end of the corn harvest, he went in and entirely destroyed the field to get his corn harvest out.
Right.
Well, then what's he going to do next year?
Right.
So timber industry is the same way. If they're only harvesting on private property that they own, they take care of it. They reseed, they replant, They maintain it. They don't let...
They do crop rotation.
Yeah. They put
a
diversity...
It is a tree farm.
Exactly. Now, on the other hand, when you have, quote, government land, which in itself is a violation of property rights principles, mm-hmm. when you have government land, and then the government joins arms with the private industry and with a corporation, and they, in this ungodly marriage, they go out and just blindly harvest public land. That's fascism. Okay? That's fascism. That is not capitalism.
Yes.
When you have a corporate and government marriage to accomplish a deed, that's fascism. And so that's what we see in the Northwest. We have so-called government land, which in itself is a violation of property rights. And the government then issues the right to, and I shouldn't even use the word right, but that's their word.
The privilege.
The privilege. It's a yeah, that's what it is. It's a privilege. The privilege to a specific monopoly company that goes out and just shreds a whole section of public land. That's fascism.
And we're not calling it fascism because we don't like it or because, you know, yeah. oh, we want to demonize it. That is literally the definition of fascism.
Yeah. When BP wants to drill for oil, we'll use the demonic BP.
The reason why capitalism can't exist, BP.
That's British Petroleum,
yeah.
by the way. That is fascism. But when BP decides they want to drill a well, they don't go and buy a piece of land and then drill a well on that land and suffer the consequences if they damage that land.
Mm-hmm.
What they do is they get a lease from a government.
Yep.
That's fascism.
Yep.
They get a lease from a government. The government doesn't own the land. The government just decided it owns the land. It didn't do anything to in the Lockean sense, to show that it actually owns the land. It just decided it does, and it does because if you don't agree with it, they'll arrest you and kill you.
Yep.
So, you know, what do you expect BP to do? They're going to utilize that as much as possible with as little investment as possible, and if damages are a result, that's business.
Yep.
Now, that wouldn't happen if it was private, but it's not private. BP is not a private company, and they're drilling on land or water that's not privately owned.
Yep.
Therefore, pollution and destruction of the environment is almost guaranteed.
Yep.
Whereas, if there were no corporations, corporations exist solely because the state creates the opportunity for them.
Mm-hmm.
The state creates corporations, and corporations support the state. You think, oh, well, if it weren't for the government, corporations would overrun everything. No, look at what makes a corporation what it is.
Mm-hmm.
A corporation exists because of the state, not the other way around. Anyway, now I'm ranting. Man, you know,
It's just, it gets very frustrating because you hear all the time, you know, people throw out these, oh, well, see, that's why capitalism fails. And it's like That is not capitalism.
Right.
That is fascism.
Yeah.
That is why fascism fails.
Yeah. It's very frustrating. And then you come along, well, then there should be another word. You should get another word instead of capitalism. It doesn't matter. We could call it bunny hops.
Yeah.
We could call it anything you want to call it, and the state and the supporters of the state would pervert that word and make it into something bad.
Yep.
And this is why I was having this discussion with someone, trying to explain to them about fascism and how economics works. And they said, well, you shouldn't call it fascism because that word has been twisted by associating it with Nazis. Well, that's not my fault.
Yeah.
That's the Nazis' fault, and it's not. I don't have any responsibility in that. The fact is, fascism is fascism. Communism is communism, socialism is socialism, and free market capitalism is free market capitalism.
Yep.
And to call it something else because someone else abused that word, they'll just pick another word to abuse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, libertarians used to be called liberals. In the 1800s, libertarians were liberals. But communists took over that word. So now if you say someone is a liberal, what you're actually talking about is a socialist or a communist,
mm-hmm.
or a so-called progressive. What are they progressing towards? Socialism.
Yep.
So they stole that word. So we gave up the word liberal. Now we're libertarian. Well, if you make libertarians out to be baby eaters, what are we going to call ourselves then?
Yeah.
Oh, we can't call ourselves libertarians because they eat babies. Well, that doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah.
Why don't we stand up and say, no, anarchy does not mean chaos. Anarchy does not mean someone's going to bust through your door and kill you and no one will help you. That is not anarchy. That's the lie the state tells you anarchy is. Anarchy is not, we have no roads, we can't drive. No, that's the lie states tell you.
And that kind of brings us to this point where, you know, there are a lot of people who are minarchists, and that's, you know, they have they want a smaller state, they want a contained state. And they almost always, when you start talking to them, they have a thing. They have this one thing that they can understand that the state needs to go away on all these other accounts, but not this.
It's their teddy bear, their security blanket,
their security
pacifier.
Yeah. And that could be, you know, roads, it could be national defense, it could be
police,
it could be fire departments.
Air traffic control.
Yeah. Everybody has this thing that they say, well, I can trust the free market to do everything else, but not this.
Yeah, and really, it is a pacifier. It is that thing that the little kid holds on to. That's the last remnant of being a child that they just don't want to let go of, and they really want to be a grown up. And they really, and I'm not saying minarchists are childish. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just making a comparison to how a child will cling to something, and they know in their mind, eventually I got to let go of this.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't want to cross that path. I'll tell you what else it's like. I remember vividly, I'm half a century old, and I remember vividly having to let go of the electric horse at the store. When it just became a time when I was too big for the electric horse, and I just couldn't justify riding it anymore. And I remembered how much fun I had as a little kid riding that little horse, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And there just came a time when I just couldn't ask Mom for another... Well, I think it was a quarter by that time, but I remember when they were a dime. But I couldn't justify asking for a quarter any longer to get on that because I was just too big. But I could remember how much fun it was, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what happens sometimes with people. They want to cling to a part of the state. But what you really have to ask yourself is, it's not, can the state do X? Or how will the state do X? Or the state... I'm sorry, I'm saying that backwards. Kai's looking at me like I just grew a horn out of the middle of my forehead. The question is not how will the free market provide X? Or how will the free market assure me my safety? Or assure me that there's roads? Or assure that we have safe travel? Or whatever. That's not the question. The question is, if I have my choice of trusting a system that's based on theft, aggression, and lies, or if I have my choice of a system that's based on voluntarism and law, then which would I choose?
Mm-hmm.
Because honestly, the state is not based on law.
Mm-hmm.
The state has no concept of law.
Yep.
The state cannot enforce law. It's incapable of enforcing law. And I think anybody who really gets to know what's going on in the world within states can see that the states enforce the exact opposite of law.
Right.
So how can the states provide justice and law when the state itself is incapable of justice and law?
Yep.
If the state could provide law, it would arrest all the employees of the state for theft.
Right. And it's hard because, you know, so many people say, well, you know, if we could just get back to the old times.
Yeah.
You know, there's this fallacy that people think, well, if we could just get back to the Constitution, it'd be okay.
Or everything
keep it under control.
Everything was fine before they passed before the Federal Reserve came in, or before there was income tax, or everything was fine before before Wilson got us involved in World War One, or before before the Spanish American War. We were fine before the Spanish American War, or but actually, when the first president, Washington, was elected, and he happened to be the largest distiller in the newly formed nation. Mm-hmm. And the first thing that happened was a law was passed taxing who? Alcohol producers.
Yep.
Now, how would the president of the newly formed nation support a law saying that alcohol producers have to be taxed when he's the largest alcohol producer in the nation? You say, well, that doesn't make any sense. No, it makes exactly perfect sense, because that's fascism.
Yep.
Abraham Lincoln was too. But George Washington, in an act of fascism, pushed through the whiskey tax, taxing himself, knowing that his operation could handle the tax, but it would be a crushing blow to all his competition.
Yep.
Then he used the military of this newly formed country to go and enforce this tax upon people who had never had tax upon their alcohol production before.
Mm-hmm.
So you could literally have people living in Appalachia who were producing alcohol as their primary means of living.
Yep.
And they had never in their entire life been taxed. And now there's this revolution, a secession.
These East Coasters have this secession.
Yeah, that the Appalachians had nothing to do with.
They enforce this secession upon the Appalachians.
Yeah.
And they take Appalachia. They don't, there was no, hey guys, do you want to join us?
Appalachia didn't vote.
Yeah.
There was no vote. We, my forefathers, we had no say in the Continental Congress. None. Mm-hmm. We were entirely not represented. And yet, they just swallowed us anyway.
Yep.
And then they decide to tax us with their liquor tax. And that's where the Whiskey Rebellion came from.
Yep.
Now, I'll give George Washington credit. I've written this before and I've said it numerous times. George Washington was smart enough that when he decided to march his army into Pennsylvania to enforce the alcohol tax, the whiskey tax, he was smart enough that he did not go through Appalachia. He went around through the low country and came up the sort of the back way into Pennsylvania. Because had he marched his army across Appalachia, he never would have made it to Pennsylvania.
No. Appalachia took out the British army
when
the British army tried to march through Appalachia.
King's Mountain. The state has a huge mythology that they've written about that, but the truth is that a British army attempted a flanking maneuver to get behind Lafayette's army, and in the process they wandered into Appalachia.
And they trespassed on private lands.
And that is why the Appalachians attacked them.
Yeah, the Appalachians were not participating in the revolution. The Appalachians were simply enforcing their property rights.
Yes. If Lafayette's army had marched through eastern Tennessee, the same fate would have happened to Lafayette and his army.
Mm-hmm.
Or Washington and his army. If you notice, Washington spent the entire war, other than basically two battles, Washington spent the entire war retreating, doing his best not to get in a battle. If Washington had wandered his military into Appalachia, they would have the war would have been much shorter.
Mm-hmm. So this idea that, if we could just get back to the Constitution, it's not.
Yeah, I kind of wandered there, didn't I?
You know?
I kind of wandered off into Appalachia. I like to rant about Appalachia. Yeah, the Constitution, the minute the Constitution was signed, the Articles of Confederation fell away. And we have this lie that's told to us by state schools, by the socialist schools, that says, oh, well, the Articles of Confederation were a failed government. Well, no, the only way you consider the Articles of Confederation a failed government is if you realize that under the Articles of Confederation, the federal government could never grow and expand and dominate life.
Yep.
Whereas, if we get a constitution and we put in it a limited set of things, then we have the formation, we have the structure, the bones
yep.
of an empire.
And, you know, I've pointed out before, going back to the Constitution won't help anything, because if the Constitution had... If the Constitution were capable of controlling the government, it would have controlled the government.
Right.
It clearly can't do that because it hasn't done that.
Yeah, and even in the first presidency, it didn't do that.
Yeah.
The Constitution did not keep Washington from marching on the whiskey producers.
It didn't prevent the War of 1812.
It didn't stop Madison from passing the Alien and Sedition Act, which actually made it out against the law to speak bad against who? Madison.
Right.
There was a guy that was actually arrested for calling Madison, I think he called him a fat little pig or something like that, and he was arrested
yep.
because he called the president a fat little pig or whatever it was. Now, can you imagine that? But that was, what, this was Madison the second president, I think? I can't remember the exact order. No, it was Washington, then Adams. Sure. Maybe it was Adams that passed that. I think it was Adams, because Jefferson was his vice president. I'm
yeah.
saying Madison, but that's... I'm sorry, dead Madison. I didn't mean to. That was Adams. That was John Adams. Because Jefferson was his vice president,
mm-hmm.
and Jefferson was so afraid of the Alien and Sedition Act that he was afraid to write letters because they would confiscate the letters in transit. Now, keep in mind... This is like the, what's the current thing now where they just come in and check your email and Homeland Security.
Yeah, Homeland Security.
This is the terrors of Homeland Security that were inflicted upon Thomas Jefferson, who was the vice president at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And the Constitution didn't stop it.
Yep.
So Jefferson clandestinely had to write Kentucky and Virginia resolutions to try to say, look, the states can stop this. The states can override the Constitution. And it was kind of kicked back and forth whether they could. Well, the ultimate answer to that, and Tom Woods is out there right now. You know, he's got a great book out and everything, and Tom Woods shows how nullification is a part of American history.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that when the nullification becomes serious, the federal government will just say, we opt out.
Yeah.
We're not going to let you nullify that.
Yep.
And if you don't believe me, ask the people in California who are being arrested for medical marijuana right now.
Yep.
Ask the dying guy in the wheelchair with cancer how come he's looking at the rest of his life in prison because he legally bought marijuana for medical purposes.
Ask the Amish farmer who takes raw milk from one state where it's legal to another state where it's legal.
And the federal government gets involved anyway.
Yep.
So nullification is a great theory, and I appreciate Tom Woods bringing the light to it that he has done. But the fact of the matter is, when you're dealing with the state, you're not talking about somebody who plays fair.
Yeah.
They are not going to ever play by the rules.
Yep.
So if they're not going to ever play by the rules, how is sitting down and writing new rules going to
yeah.
solve anything? Or how is, well, you're not playing by the rules, let's get back to the rules. Okay, so the state says, okay, we'll get back to the rules. And then they go right back to what they were doing.
Right, because they never, the rules were never legitimate to begin with.
No, and, I was going to start reading the Bill of Rights to show how ridiculous some of them are, but... If you just consider, let me take the Fifth Amendment. Let me just read the Fifth Amendment. No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment or indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arising in the land or naval forces or in the militia, when in actual service in time of war or public danger, nor shall any person be subject to the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb, nor shall he be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. Okay, so we're told the Fifth Amendment guarantees that you don't have to witness against yourself, that you can't be tried for the same thing twice, that your possessions can't be taken, quote, without, what did it say, just compensation? Just compensation? Who decides that?
The state.
Of course. So how could it possibly be just compensation? And there's so many disclaimers in that one Fifth Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on the presentment of an indictment of a grand jury. And then it doesn't describe what a grand jury is.
Or what an infamous crime is.
Or presentment of an indictment. It doesn't explain what an indictment is. Now you can say, well, those things are already established in law. This was the foundational document of our government.
Mm-hmm.
This is the foundational document. Anything prior to this is going to be superseded by this.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's no definition to what this is.
Yep.
And I'm sorry, people say, well, the Bill of Rights was written in plain language. That's not plain language.
No.
Now, if you would say something like, you cannot be questioned about your own activity, but instead we see, nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself. Well, then shouldn't that mean that if I write something, then because I am the author of that, that can't be used against me?
Mm-hmm.
And yet emails are used all the time as evidence against people.
Yep.
Written things are used all the time.
Video
that a person shoots themselves. So, and you say, well, there was no video and there was no email. It doesn't matter. There was handwriting back then.
Yep.
And even at the writing of this, you could be arrested for what you wrote.
Yep.
The First Amendment says very clearly, Congress shall make no law restricting an establishment of religion or prohibition or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of press or the right of the people to peaceably assemble and to petition the government for redress of grievances. And yet, there's Jefferson, who right off the bat can't send a letter to somebody because he's afraid of getting arrested.
Yep.
So clearly this thing didn't do what it was designed to do, or what we were told it was designed to do.
Yep.
Perhaps it did exactly what it was designed to do.
Yeah.
Ah. Rant and rant and rant.
So, I mean, you know, you just have to keep that in mind when all of these people, you know, and I like Ron Paul, but he falls into this same trap,
yeah,
of thinking, you know, if we could just get rid of this one thing, if we could just get back to the way we were before. No, we were flawed from the beginning.
A state is never going to produce a good result.
No.
The existence of a state, the state itself, is a socialist entity. It is based on the concept that the individual is not the source of the individual's rights.
Mm-hmm.
That the collective group of people is somehow has rights over the individual, so the individual has to conform to their tax support,
mm-hmm,
and relinquish their right to defend themselves so that the government can defend them, you know, can do the defense. When a person no longer has the ability to own their own property, if you're being taxed, you don't own that property.
Yep.
And we don't own our property in the U.S. The government can come in at any time and take any piece of property you own or tax anything you own or anything you buy.
Or come onto your property.
They can come onto your property. They make up the what is probable cause. They decide whether or not there's a reason they can come on your property. So, in essence, we have no private property.
Mm-hmm.
We have no private ownership. That being the case, we are not free individuals,
yep,
as long as the state exists.
Yep.
So even the state in its most restricted form must have the ability to forcibly tax and to forcibly extract those taxes,
yep,
through use of violence. It cannot allow anybody else to have the ability to use violence, because if it does, somebody will just knock off the government.
Yep.
So it requires a monopoly of violence and the ability to tax.
Yep.
Well, if you have a state with a monopoly on violence and the ability to tax, then what could you possibly do to keep it from growing out of control?
Right. Nothing.
It will always grow out of control. It doesn't matter what magic words you write on a paper.
Yep. It doesn't, you know, it's like buying that little puppy, you know? Yeah, it's tiny right now. Mm-hmm. Look at his paws. It's going to get huge.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can do to stop that.
Yeah. And, you know, unfortunately, state begets state. So just like, you know, an apple tree produces an apple tree, and wheat produces wheat, and lions produce lions, the state produces a state. So if you if a state gets too big, in Jefferson's mind, we need a revolution every now and then to keep the state in line. No, the state produces another state.
Mm-hmm.
So when you rebel against a state, what you're actually just going to do is replace it with a nastier state.
Yep.
It's a cycle that is never going to produce freedom. So state is not the answer. Constitution is not the answer. Revolution is not the answer. Privately separating yourself and becoming independent on as many things as you possibly can is the answer.
Mm-hmm. And I wanted to, very quickly, because I'm sure we're running out of time.
We are, yes.
But very quickly, I wanted to point out, along this lines, people, you know, bumper stickers all over the, oh, you can't take my guns, I have a constitutional right to have them. You are saying that you were given a right by the state. If you are accepting that the state has given you that right, then the state has the right to take it away.
Right.
If you're saying, I have property rights as a natural law because I am a human, mm-hmm. I am not given those rights by any other human. They are my natural law.
Mm-hmm.
Then you cannot have that taken away by the state.
Right.
Natural law can only come from outside of humans.
Right.
You know, I can't give you a right.
Right.
That's not how rights work.
Exactly. You have the right because you exist.
Right.
Not because someone gave it to you as a gift or a privilege. Well, we probably did go over time again. You know, I guess what we could just do is start saying, well, it's a 45-minute podcast. Then we'd be a 50-minute podcast.
And then we'd
be you can't restrict these things. They just get out of control. Oh, boy. Okay. Well, anyway, check out the website, badquaker.com. Leave us some feedback. Give us some email. Send us some email. Badquaker@badquaker.com is the admin's email address. My email address is ben@badquaker.com. And
I think I'm Kai.
Kai@badquaker.com. Okay. And send us an email. Tell us, you know, what you think, or suggestions for future episodes. We do still have coming up. I still have to set up some interviews. I know I've teased for them several times, but a couple of the people aren't quite as available as I know as they would like to be. It's one of the guys in particular is in a place where I wouldn't want to spend any time at all, but that's what he gets paid for, so he's there. But hopefully he'll come back and all in one piece with all of his fingers and toes, and we'll be able to get him on the phone and talk to him. But in the meantime, send us, if you have any questions, this is going to be your last chance to send questions for the Army Major, who I'm going to be contacting shortly and setting up an interview with him. If you have questions for an active duty Army Major, send it to ben@badquaker.com. And we'll see about getting that included in the interview. Until the next time, thanks for listening.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for listening to especially my long-winded rant. But
and if you like us, you know, share the link on Facebook, Twitter, any other of the umpteen million social networking sites that you visit. You know.
Yep. Say our name. And thank you very much for listening.